Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
This is True Crime Cast. I'm Jamie, here as always, with John. What's up?
Dude, sorry if I made noise during our intro. And
I'm not going to lie, it threw me off a little.
Yeah, well, it threw me off. I wasn't expecting it to happen. I was trying to rearrange myself quietly, and then you just made a lot of noise. I'm sorry.
Have you ever thought about doing it before we go on the air? Has that ever been a possibility?
You know what?
You never do anything.
Why don't you and my wife get together and just write up your critiques in writing? I'll read them if they're submitted prior to 8 p.m. Oh, wait. Too late. All right, let's keep rolling. Yeah, guys, thank you so much for joining us here on True Crime Cast. Jamie and I are fine. We promise. We're recording at a different time than what is typical for our schedules. So God bless our hearts and bear with us, folks.
Got a couple five-star reviews to read. So thank you very much to WPCU member. Says, look forward to listening to you guys. Love the show. Not sure I want to know what WPCU stands for.
You ever listen to Bob and Tom in the morning? Well, like when they would say words like that, they would say, WPCU, they're on your side.
No, that tracks though. This comes from JB Berg 90. Hey guys, my name is Josh Brandenburg from Waco, Kentucky.
Hey.
His real name out there. I listen to you guys daily, especially while restocking my vending machines around Berea and Richmond. I appreciate everything you guys do, and y'all help me get through the day at work in all caps. Thank you.
God, let's talk more about these vending machines.
Like, yeah, are they little business partners?
Yeah.
Oh, you're wanting food. I'm wanting to make some passive income here.
No, I mean, just bring me, you know, one of those little Debbie things like with peanut butter and jelly in it. Brandenburg, if you could bring that over, you could be on Bless Their Hearts because that sounds amazing.
We can be bought with little Debbie cakes. There is no doubt about that.
Oh, man. Thank you so much. That's awesome.
Yeah, thanks for listening. We really appreciate it. And thanks for those reviews. Also a great way to submit a case recommendation. So keep that in mind.
Yep. Don't forget, Patreon is also available. We ran a promo. You could get some money off. So if you missed that, be on the lookout for more. But man, Patreon, we have almost 7 years, 8 years of content over there that is exclusively available to our Patreon members. So visit www.patreon.com while you're there. Just look up True Crime Cast. You'll see as little as $3 a month gets you access to all of those exclusive episodes.
We are recording after the sun's gone down, which we don't do very often. So we're doing our best here and appreciate your patience as we talk about a story that is it's fascinating, it's important, and it's ongoing. So this is not completely wrapped up, but it is something that I think we need to talk about, especially on the heels of the Karen Reed verdict.
So, all right, man. Well, with that said, why don't you get the ball rolling?
We're going to talk about Sandra Birchmore. And if you are really into true crime, you may have heard that name. We're going to talk about her upbringing first. She was born in May of 1997 in Staunton, Massachusetts. Her mom, Denise, had been married to a man named Warren when he was hit by a truck at a Boston crosswalk in 1995. This left Denise as a widow at just 31 years old. A year and a half later, she gave birth to a baby girl who was Sandra. Her biological father's name isn't listed on the birth certificate, and she was given her mother's late husband's last name. So really a lot of questions out there about who her biological father is and what that did to her. John, you're a social worker. I've done foster care. Biological families are very important. And a lot of people said that it really bothered Sandra to not have her biological dad in her life.
I think having a man in your life, whether it's biological, adopted, or a mentor, it's critically important. I mean, I'm in my 40s and I long for, you know, an older man to kind of be there with me and like speak some wisdom into my life. And I mean, it's critically important for younger people. So yeah, man, I can relate and I can imagine for sure that that was something that stuck with Sandra. So a little bit more about her. She was raised by her single mom in a home that was owned by her mom's aunt and uncle, Claire and Gerald Gaudet. Claire and Gerald had raised the niece and her siblings as their own, and Sandra loved them both like her very own grandparents. Denise had constant health problems that kept her from keeping a job, so money was tight around Sandra's home. Relatives remember Sandra being the one in charge of her mother's medications, noting that she acted more like a parent to her mom than her mom did to her. One relative would say that she was never brought up like a child. She was always kind of like a young adult, even at a very young age. She was more mature, probably asked to do more as a kid than most kids are asked to do.
Yeah, and that forces kids to grow up, which is, you know, you can look at her and say, wow, she was responsible young, really good for her. But also they're missing out on a lot of their childhood, which can cause trauma later on. I'm going to jump ahead to a really major part of this story. In 2010, the local paper ran an announcement for the Explorers program, saying the police department believes in your kids and wishes to give them a positive foundation from which to build future success. Denise thought this would be a good opportunity for Sandra to find role models, and she was already interested in law enforcement, so she signed Sandra up for the program, and she was just 12 years old. Obviously, she's 12. This is the Explorers program's not an internship program. It's not really a full shadowing program. It's just kind of being around law enforcement to increase that comfortability and to give them a chance to see what it's like.
I know our community has something similar to this that young, like middle school age kids can go to in the summertime, especially because, you know, folks like Sandra just need, number one, they need adult men in their life, and they just need somebody to show them that they care about them. So this is kind of a win-win situation for kids.
And she got a really hard time socially. A lot of people picked on her. Her mom was in bad health, and things weren't good at home. And people knew that. And kids are vicious when they find out things like that. And she would get threatened quite a bit and talked down to by a lot of her peers. Sandra also took medication for ADHD and asthma, and sometimes visited school nurse up to 3 times a day. Her guidance counselor at school was trying to teach her ways to make friends, to build relationships, but they ended up calling Denise with concerns about Sandra because they were worried about her physically, emotionally, socially. She was having a really hard time, and you know, she's 12, she's going into middle school. John, you and I both have middle school kids. It's a hard, hard age, even without all these issues.
Yeah, man. I remember middle school, and it was hard back then. And God, I don't know that you could pay me enough to go back to middle school right now. But that was at school. But the opposite could be said about the Explorers program. That's where Sandra seemed to thrive. So you had to wear a uniform T-shirt, and they said that she wore this shirt with pride. And she told everybody how much she loved running laps and racing the other explorers, even with her asthma. Keep in mind, she had asthma, so running, not the easiest thing, but she loved it so much that she didn't mind because she was finally making friends. Denise was thrilled to see her daughter like this, and she even wrote a thank you letter to the officer who was in charge of the program. After graduation in 2015, she actually went into basic training for the Army Reserve. She hoped that this experience would help her become a police officer eventually. And after just a couple of months, however, she was sent home because her asthma had caused more of an issue, and she didn't disclose that to the Army. So they had to send her home, and her dream would be cut short. But this didn't keep her down long. She came up with a new plan. She enrolled in the local community college in order to study criminal justice. So she was doing really well until she was handed a major blow. Her mother's health had deteriorated even more, and sadly, she passed away in 2016. Just weeks later, her grandmother, who Sandra considered her best friend, also passed away. And remember, Sandra was a kid who had a really hard time making friends. So in just a span of a month, she lost her mother and her best friend, who was her grandmother. She was devastated, but she continued to work hard in school. One professor would later say, sometimes you see people come through who would crawl over glass to get their education, and she was one of those people. She wasn't going to let anything get in her way. She graduated in 2018, and she dedicated her cap with the yellow police tape on it, and on those words were written, "Case closed." So she saw this as a major achievement in her life.
As she should. College education has changed so much decade to decade. Sometimes people were expected to go for her. She thought that the military was going to be her route to a career, but instead she's gone a different direction and found success there. She was obviously very determined. She was a hard worker. But some people doubted that she had the right personality to be in law enforcement. Just like every field, I feel like you need people of all kinds, but there are some people you just meet them and you're like, yeah, you don't have the this or that to go into a certain career. Sandra did get a job as a mall security guard, and her boss said he had to let her go eventually because she and other employees spent most of their time goofing off, which you get some young people together, put them in that scenario, and as serious as she was about her career, she was not able to show that in this position.
I mean, I don't know. I'm so far, I think she's showed a lot of grit and determination. She had a dream and she wasn't going to let things stop in her way, but these are young kids. I mean, they're adults, but they're young. They're mall security guards. I mean, they've made movies about how goofy this premise is. So maybe this is a boss who maybe viewed himself too highly, or was the goofing off extreme?
Wow. Certainly possible. I'm not sure, but I do know she really wanted to make friends. So she was having a healthier life socially, but it seemed, at least for the time being, to set her back vocationally. She ended up doing some ride-alongs with the Braintree Police Department, but she had some similar issues there. She was hoping to get some experience, to make some connections where she could potentially work there in the future, but she wasn't impressive in these ride-alongs. The officers didn't get the feeling that she would be a good fit. They said she was overly personal with officers, that she talked too much about her own problems. She talked about problems with boyfriends and really overshared upon first meeting them. One sergeant that had worked with her in these ride-alongs said, "I just think she's a young, lonely, bored young lady, and she's looking for someone to listen to her. And we know that she had social issues and she relied on the counselors at her school quite a bit. So maybe she's looking for that type of mentorship in the police department." But that seemed to turn off those that were making those hiring decisions.
In 2018, she had started driving for Uber. Sometimes she would bring along her friend Haley to just give, a presence of safety. Like, she's a young woman driving Uber cars, so have a friend with her would make her feel a little safer. Around the same time, she also took the civil service exam and made a list of all the eligible candidates. But honestly, she was ranked so far down the list, they never even got to her. And it's this time that we see her. She seems lost. She confided in her friend Haley that all she really wanted to do in this earth was to be a mother. But she, at least as far as we know, had one miscarriage. And that seemed to just make her want a child even more. But that Christmas, she got the news she wanted. She was pregnant, and she started getting her life back on track. She was taking nurses' classes at the community college. She had a new job at the elementary school. She was even getting settled into her very first apartment. And that all makes what happens next even much more tragic.
Yeah, as soon as things started headed in the right direction, they took a big turn. And when we get back from the break, we'll talk about what happened to Sandra following that Christmas surprise. On February 4th of 2021, Sandra's coworkers at the elementary school were worried because she hadn't shown up for work. The last anybody had heard from her was Monday night, and at this point it was Thursday. So they decided to call police and see if there had been any reports or they could find out if anything had come in about Sandra. Officers came to the school, and then they went to her home, and when they got there, there was no answer at her apartment. So they ended up getting a key from the property manager. They went in, and the place looked empty, except for two cats that had been walking around. And then they went into Sandra's bedroom. They found her seated on the floor with her back against the closet. She had a strap attached to the closet door that was wrapped tightly around her neck. Her skin was blue, and she was wearing the same clothes that she had on Monday, and it turned out that she had been dead for days. This looked like she had tied herself to the door and had taken her own life by essentially making a makeshift noose and hanging herself.
So let's talk about what the scene looked like. So on the floor, about a foot away from Sandra, was her cell phone. They were able to determine that it locked at 9:13 p.m. on Monday and was not opened again. Her friends and family noted Sandra was always on her phone, talking, texting, posting. So the first look into Sandra's death was done by the state medical examiner and state police. After 4 months, they concluded her death was a suicide. Her friends and family were just simply not happy with that. They said there's no way that she would have committed suicide while pregnant. So this story caught the attention of Boston Globe reporter Laura Cremaldi. Now, Laura began digging into Sandra's past to better understand what might have happened, and what she uncovered is wild. So we have to thank her for a lot of the information that we are going to cover today. So first, Laura interviewed friends and family, filed nearly 100 public records requests, and reviewed extensive court documents and police reports. So let's dig into some of her findings. So it all starts with the Police Explorers program, started by then the Deputy Police Chief Robert Devine. So at the time, when she was 12 years old, she joined the program. Matthew Farwell had just become a police officer in the neighboring town of Wellesley. In his younger years, Matthew and his twin brother William were serious troublemakers. Devine had encouraged Matthew to join the Army, which he did for 4 years, and then gave him a glowing recommendation to the Wellesley Police Department. But Matthew really wanted to come back to his hometown of Staunton, so the police chief there gave Matthew an interview, which he canceled at the last minute, so he passed on him. So he tried again in 2012, and this time Matthew was hired.
William, again Matthew's twin, was also trying to get hired at Staunton, but his record showed that he had gone AWOL while in the Army and had other behavior issues that were inherently incompatible with police work. William had a background in explosives, so he was actually offered a job in Staunton in 2017. Ultimately, the police chief said that he was persuaded to take on the brothers because of their military experience, their particular set of skills, and Devine's promise that through this, through their work with Officer Devine, that they had matured quite a bit. Once Matthew was an officer in Staunton, it didn't take long for him to find Sandra in the Explorers program. Now, remember, we talked about this place that she went and that she wore the shirt with pride and seemed to be a great experience for her. But then we start to find out what really happened while she was there. Matthew Farwell started meeting Sandra at the library to help her study. And in 2012, when Sandra was 15, he sent her a friend request on Facebook. For 6 months, Matthew groomed Sandra until April 2013, when the two allegedly had sexual intercourse while she was still 15 years old and he was 27. Matthew denied that this took place. He married his fiance the following month, and he may deny all of this, but there are text messages that have been recovered between he and Sandra that confirm this timeline that they were getting together. He told Sandra the day he took her virginity is not a day that he'll ever forget. And I don't know how you get more incriminating than that. He even says he wished it was a year earlier when he was helping her in the library. And remember, that would have been when she was 14. So he's taking advantage of this young teenage girl, half of his age. There's evidence of it, but he continued to deny their involvement. So while she's in their Explorers program, John, she's being groomed and sexually assaulted.
It's horrifying. It's, I mean, as you said earlier, we both have middle school kids, and this is sickening. I mean, I'm sitting here just feeling my anger start to rise. And this next part that I'm about to read and talk about is not any better. So the Explorers program definitely had the potential to give kids a sense of direction, a sense of discipline, but unfortunately it also brought young, impressionable teen girls and boys, for that matter, into close proximity with adults with little oversight. Robert Devine did little to enforce appropriate boundaries between the adults and the children, and later internal reports would say that Devine let his officers blur ethical lines and tolerated some flirting. So let's talk about another kid, Ashley Bell, who at the time was 12 years old when she joined the Explorers program. So this young girl, 12 years old, developed a crush on Devine, and like preteen girls do, she doodled his initials on her hand one time in a gel pen, and then also gave him cards and candy. I mean, it was very clear that this 12-year-old girl had a crush on this man in the uniform, right? Well, she was devastated to find out that Officer Devine, who was 30 years old, was engaged to be married to another woman. So he saw her crying. And the way that he addressed this problem is so inappropriate. And honestly, dude, as a father, if I heard that this happened, I would go to jail for murdering a police officer, right? So
yeah.
He took Ashley to a storage closet. This was away from others. And he lifted her up on a desk. And he set that 12-year-old on the desk. And he looked at her and said, "You are a knockout. When you're 18 years old, we're going to go out together. I'm going to take you out on a date." Then he kissed this girl on the forehead and gave her a very long hug. Ashley still had hope that she could be with her crush. So she wrote him a love letter and asked a dispatcher to give it to him. This time, though, her mother found out. She heard Ashley talking to a friend about the letter, and she marched into Devine's office and demanded to see the letter that her daughter had written him. Devine acted like he had no idea what she was talking about. Ashley's mom saw a crumpled paper there in the trash can. They both lunged for this paper at the same time. Thank God Ashley's mom got it first. She looked at Devine and said, "Let me tell you something. You go near my kid again, and I'm going to shoot you with your own gun." And good for Ashley's mom, because that's something probably similar to what I would have done myself.
Yeah, I was going to say, I absolutely love that. And just think about this scene.
This scene pisses me off.
You're an officer lunging for a piece of trash that is evidence about you sexually assaulting or proposing an assault, grooming, whatever you want to call it, horrible acts, and you're trying to wrestle it away from her mother. It doesn't get much worse of a look than that. As Sandra continued her high school career, her sexual encounters with Matthew Farwell became more regular, often meeting him in his police car or in his personal truck. She started telling younger explorers that she was kind of talking to Matthew. Again, remember, she shared a lot. But she also regularly babysat Matthew's kid that he and his wife had at their home. There were lots of stories of Sandra's exchanges with Farwell and others, but her friends thought that she was talking about relationships she's had with other teenagers and said they didn't really know or believe that she was in a relationship with a man of that age. Years later, they realized that these were happening with Matthew and other officers. She was talking to them in flirty ways, and not that she's doing anything wrong. She's groomed here, but these are very sexually powered messages between these adult male officers and Sandra. But according to her friends, they didn't realize this until they were already out of high school, which one of the last things Sandra did in high school was skip her prom to go and spend time with Matthew. Her friend Haley said that she was also constantly talking to somebody on Facebook Messenger whose Facebook name was Marty Riggs. By 2020, Matthew's twin, William, and Deputy Devine were arranging meetups to have sex with Sandra. William was meeting her in his patrol car and encouraging her to have sex with other people at the department. When these stories finally came to light, Sandra's family was appalled that she was being treated this way and disgusted that this would happen. One childhood friend said she was looking for appreciation, love, listening, compassion, and every one of those men took advantage of her. So just in case this hasn't been crystal clear, Matthew and William Farwell and Deputy Divine were sexually abusing Sandra as a teenager and continuing to do so into adulthood and encouraging other people to do it as well. They use this Explorer program as a grooming program for their personal sexual desires.
This is awful. Yeah. So, man, even though she was encouraged to sleep with other men in the department, Matthew was incredibly jealous if she spent time with anybody else. He actually demanded that she keep her location on her phone on at all times so he could monitor where she was going. And one time he texted her and said, "I know you're hiding crap because your location is off again." And she responded, "I'm not doing anything I shouldn't be." So the day Sandra found out about Matthew's wife expecting their second child, Sandra actually gave him an ultimatum. She told him that she wanted to get pregnant or else she would tell everyone about their relationship, including that it started when she was only 16 years old. She also knew that meeting up for sex while he was on the job would get him in trouble. So she took a screenshot of her ovulation schedule and sent it to him. And then at Christmas of that year, she was pregnant. She worked on a handmade announcement on poster board with two little feet and a heart that said, "Congrats, we're going to be parents, 2021. And she texted a picture of that to Matthew.
So all she wanted at this point in her life, remember going back to when we didn't know this was happening in her life, she wanted to be a mother. She'd had a miscarriage. She finds out she's pregnant again, and she's thrilled about this. Sandra insisted that Matthew's name be on the birth certificate and that he would need to be there for the birth. Again, he's married and has one kid and one on the way with his wife. He told her, "You are truly the worst person on the face of the earth," when she told him that he needed to be there. But in the new year, Matthew, at least to Sandra, seemed to be coming around. He would occasionally drop by. He brought Sandra ginger ale when she was feeling sick to her stomach. They talked about getting him a key to her place so that he could come and go as he needed to and have access to help her and to get ready for the baby. Even though in the past he said he didn't want any part of that because that would just be another piece of evidence to expose their relationship. He asked her for an access code and they started having conversations about how they were going to go about parenting this child. On one visit, Matthew spent time looking around her apartment, and he seemed to be inspecting the bedroom and the bedroom closet, again, all the time saying, trying to figure out how we're going to take care of this baby, where should the baby sleep, and what's this going to look like. But especially in retrospect, that seems pretty odd that he was spending so much time looking at the area where a few months later she would be found dead.
Well, and I think it's important. I mean, they're talking about getting him a key, talking about getting him the access code as if this is like you have to key in to get access to her apartment and then a key to actually key into it. Looking and inspecting the bathroom and the bedroom. I mean, now on hindsight, this kind of looks suspicious, right? He's kind of making sure he has what he needs to get in, get out, and do what he needs to do. I mean, am I seeing this incorrectly?
I think that certainly looks that way in retrospect. At the time, she was just happy that he was around. She was happy that he was at least saying he wanted to be involved, and she was hopeful that he was going to be around for the baby, and maybe their relationship could progress because of it.
So in the last days of her life, those who were around her said that she was excited for her future. She was talking baby names with her hairdresser. She went to lunch with a friend who bought her a stroller from Walmart. It was about $200. She told Matthew that she wanted to buy an outfit for the baby to come home with as soon as they found out the gender, whether it was a boy or a girl. She wanted to go get that outfit for the kid. She contacted a newborn photographer and texted with a neighbor about picking up some baby clothes. Then it was announced that schools were closing early because of an incoming snowstorm on Monday. So Sandra texted Matthew and told him to come by, but he replied he wouldn't be in the area that day. So the security camera captured her coming inside with a snow brush for her car at about 5:33 p.m. on February 1st. At 9:08 p.m., Matthew asked Sandra if he could come by after all. Cameras caught him walking in a few minutes later with a baseball cap, with his hood up, wearing a COVID mask, and he was well known to be, like, he hated wearing those, but he's wearing them then. After 29 minutes, he's seen on camera again leaving. In another 12 hours, Matthew's son would be born at a nearby hospital. Sandra would not unlock her phone again after Matthew's visit. So Matthew's son, meaning the kid that he's having with his wife.
With his wife, yes.
Sandra's
his second child with her.
So later, Matthew would tell investigators that he went there to tell her that their relationship was over and the baby was not his.
Which is also not something, like, science tells you that, right? Like, he doesn't, that's not something, the baby not being his is not something for him to say or even bring up.
I think the only way you could definitively say that is if you've never had sexual intercourse with her. Otherwise, I don't think you can definitively say that until a DNA test is done.
Exactly. When Sandra's family finally came in her apartment, they found something that they believe was missed by police. Sandra had a pink flamingo necklace from her grandmother, and it was now on the floor and broken, with Sandra's hair tangled in it, which is not something that would happen if you were working on tying something around your own neck. They turned this piece of evidence over to police in March of 2021 after Sandra had been autopsied and cremated. The family held a funeral to put their girl to rest. In 2022, investigators announced that they found no evidence of foul play in Sandra's death. They also said they would be dropping the charge of statutory rape on Matthew Farwell, given that the main witness was dead.
I have a lot of problems with that, and I guess we can put a pin in that and come back to it.
Yeah, I mean, what does that give motivation to people to do?
Well, I mean, you can have evidence outside of a testimony. Did they have any of that, you know, perhaps incriminating text messages between the two? So I don't think you necessarily need a witness if there is other evidence, but I digress.
Completely agree. Later that year, though, state investigators started focusing on those texts that showed that Matthew could have been charged with larceny, stealing from taxpayers for meeting Sandra for sex while he was on duty and being paid as a police officer. Chief of Staunton Police ordered his second-in-command, whose name is Brian Holmes, to launch an internal affairs investigation looking at Matthew's conduct, particularly as it related to Sandra. Using Sandra's laptop, which doesn't delete messages if you delete them from your phone, investigators were able to recover a significant amount of text messages. John, you and I are very good friends. We're obviously business partners. I don't know if you've looked at this number, but over the course of 14 months leading up to Sandra's death, she and Matthew exchanged 33,000 text messages.
I mean, you're good at math, quick on your feet. I mean, how many does that break down to, like, a week or a day even? Let's do that math real quick.
Yeah, that's a lot.
I mean, there can't be any way you and I would have exchanged that many texts with each other. We're neighbors, we're friends, our families do stuff with each other, and we're business partners.
Yeah,
so I'm stalling to give you time to do that.
I appreciate that. Yeah, it's over 80 a day, about 83 texts per day.
I bet we're under 20 a day on a busy day.
And again, we communicate what I believe to be an awful lot. So for this to be the case, I think shows an extremely intense and complicated relationship between the two of them.
And it's reciprocal. I mean, it's not just her texting him 77 times a day and him three. I mean, this is, I don't know if I can say it's an even split, but it's definitely reciprocal.
Well, there were even messages on there where Matthew told her to delete certain messages because they would have been incriminating of him. So he would say, "Oh, delete when I said that." But obviously, if she deleted it on her phone, it stayed on the computer.
So he's aware that what he's doing is wrong.
Yeah, and blatantly trying to cover it up. They were able to get into her laptop by guessing her password, which was just a variation of Matthew's name.
So the data file of messages was a jumbled mess, but they were able to determine that these two started talking and started having sex when she was just 15 years old. On February 24th, 2021, the Staunton police put Matthew on paid leave pending the result of the internal affairs investigation. By March, Matthew was no longer cooperating with the investigation. He refused to do other interviews. He refused to do a polygraph or to give his DNA, which could have been compared to Sandra's clothes, the ligature around her neck, or the necklace that was laying on the floor. That same spring, Deputy Chief Holmes compiled a team for his internal affairs investigation. He hired two private investigators and an IT expert to conduct interviews and to analyze phone data. Their goal was simple, and it was to see if Matthew had violated the police department's rules and regulations. Soon, they were asking themselves the same questions about William and Devine.
Yeah, so they're starting to really shake up and find out what was happening with this Explorers program. William admitted to having sexual intercourse with Sandra and that he knew she was pregnant and that he knew the baby to be his brother's. So he's essentially saying that, yes, this was his baby and I was a part of this as well. The investigation also found that William and Sandra had been exchanging sexually explicit photos and videos with one another while William was at work. Again, while he's at work with taxpayer money, which I think earlier we called that larceny. He also encouraged her to secretly film her sexual encounters with others and send that to him, which, among being just gross and wrong, is illegal in Massachusetts. William also sent Sandra several videos of him having sex with another woman who is believed to be his wife, but that wasn't necessarily confirmed or really important for the purpose of this investigation. By the following spring, Holmes had compiled a mountain of evidence against the Farwell brothers and against Officer Devine. Meanwhile, Matthew remained on paid leave. During this time, he collected nearly $89,000 of salary while doing no work, while they're trying to find out how much wrong stuff he did. I can't imagine a world where I did that at my job or did anything at my job to go on leave and then paying me that much while they figure out all the bad crap I've done.
Yeah.
He was trying to earn his commercial driver's license at the time because I guess he knew worst case or best case scenario, I'm not going to be a cop again. So he had planned on starting his own trucking business. He ended up resigning from the police department on August 1st of 2022, right before his interview with Holmes. Then the story appeared in the Boston Globe, and a few days later, William and Devine were also placed on paid leave, as we know they were being investigated for their roles in grooming and sexually abusive behavior with the Explorers program.
William, like his brother, also resigned before Holmes could interview him. He and his wife actually sold their house, moved to Maryland, and on the day that he was sworn in as a TSA agent, he quit his job with the Staunton Police Force. In his resignation letter, he said that he did not have confidence in the town's investigation, and he denied all allegations. Investigators did get to speak to Devine. That would be in April of 2022. By that time, Devine had graduated from law school and earned his license to practice law. He was asked when he first heard about Matthew having a sexual relationship with Sandra, and Devine curtly responded, well, when he got put on leave. But then he corrected himself, saying that Sandra told him about it, that she had also had sex with both brothers, but at that time she was a consenting adult. He also said that he didn't believe her anyway. She said that he thought of her as a kid who had had a rough home life. She had an obsession with police officers, and he didn't buy the stories that she was saying. Investigators told Devine they didn't have any direct communication between he and Sandra and Devine, and Devine snapped and said, because you won't find it, there is none. On May 17th, however, Holmes teams did find some messages. They were actually analyzing those Facebook Messenger messages on Sandra's account, and they discovered that Devine was actually going by the name Marty Riggs, the one who Sandra talked to constantly. Devine allegedly used this account, which is named for Mel Gibson's character in Lethal Weapon, to arrange meetings with Sandra. So Devine definitely having meetings with her, but going by a different name on this Facebook account. Devine resigned before a second interview was to be conducted. In his letter, his resignation letter, that is, he said that he had no personal relationship with Sandra Birchmore. He went on in his letter to say that he now had his own law practice, and should you try to defame me at the end of this, I am prepared to resort to every legal means at my disposal to fight you, end quote.
Yeah, so he really thought he was going to get away with this because he went by Mel Gibson's character name in Lethal Weapon. That sounds exactly like what a cop in this situation would do. In September of 2022, Police Chief McNamara held a press conference announcing that all three men, the Farwell brothers and Devine, violated their oaths of office and should never have had the privilege of serving any community as a police officer. He also said Sandra was failed by, manipulated by, and used by people of authority that she admired, looked up to, and wanted to be like. The FBI was then brought in to look at the same evidence that Holmes' team had collected, and the messages they found: Matthew's excitement for role-playing rape, for role-playing incest, and how much he enjoyed choking Sandra while they were having sex. They found memes in his iCloud where the punchlines were around violence against women, specifically about choking. The FBI also noted that according to Sandra's therapist, she was not depressed or suicidal in the days leading up to her death, but Farwell's tone had definitely changed in that same time period. Remember, he had started at least pretending to come around to helping her raise this baby. He went from being controlling to kind of acting like he wanted to be a changed man. After Sandra's ultimatum of, I'm going to expose you if you don't help me with this baby, Matthew wrote in a text to her, "You have threatened me from the word go. If I didn't do and give you what you wanted, you would ruin me. I made a deal with you, and you changed the terms at every turn." The FBI not only saw this as evidence of an inappropriate relationship and violation of his role as an officer, but they saw this as motivation for murder.
The family also hired their own team to investigate this. So they hired a forensic pathologist, and they were asked to review the medical examiner's determination and said that he thought that this was more consistent with a homicide versus a suicide. Federal investigators also hired another expert, Dr. Smock, who agreed with the homicide conclusion that was presented by the family's investigative team. Dr. Smock said the fracture in Sandra's neck was inconsistent with the position that she was found in. The original report said there were no signs of trauma, but Dr. Smock said that he saw an imprint on Sandra's chest from the strap buckle, but the buckle was found near her ear. So the imprint that he found suggests that she was actually hit with this buckle before being choked. Dr. Smock said that the breaking of the necklace chain is consistent with a struggle. One more thing that the FBI uncovered was something in the health app on her iPhone. So this app tracks a user's steps while they hold their iPhone. So the last movement recorded on this phone was 8 steps, and this was recorded at 9:40 p.m. This was just a few minutes before Matthew was seen leaving the apartment on security footage. Matthew said that when he left, she was standing in her kitchen. So if that's true, then her phone must have already been in the room where she would be found near her dead body, or her after her suicide. So if she had her phone on her in the kitchen, then how did she move it to the bedroom without logging her movement? So I think the only real logical answer is that it was either on the floor in the room prior to Matthew leaving the apartment, or Matthew's lying.
And as we know from the Karen Reed trial, this health app information becomes very important when you're trying to track somebody's location at a very moment, or to see where they were maybe when they stopped moving. And it comes in important here too. And I keep bringing that up because this is in the area of Boston. So there were some names with the investigations that came up together, and they were both hitting the news in a major way at around the same time. So those investigations in some ways became tied, at least publicly. Fast forward to August of 2024, where a federal grand jury indicted Matthew Farwell for allegedly strangling Sandra Birchmore and making it look like a suicide. In February of 2025, a hearing was held for the 38-year-old accused of killing the 23-year-old Sandra Birchmore, who was also 3 months pregnant at the time with what's believed to be Farwell's baby. He was not required to be in person for this hearing, which turned out to be a brief about discovery. One of Sandra's family members and others protested in front of the courthouse. Her cousin Barbara said, "It's been a long time coming, and I hope that Sandra finally gets justice, hopefully this year. I define justice as seeing Matthew go behind bars for the rest of his life." Now, this trial hasn't happened yet, but in just the last month, it's been revealed through DNA analysis that Matthew Farwell was actually not the father of Sandra's baby. And as we talked about, she was having sex with his brother and potentially other officers at the time. Even though their text messages show that both of them believed he was the father, the fact that he is not might help Matthew's defense when he told investigators that he wasn't the father, that maybe they should believe him on some other things. Whether he's the father or not, though, that doesn't change the evidence of everything else that happened, that their text messages show us, that the camera footage of him coming and going from the house, the health app footage of her not leaving, the inconsistencies in the medical report about her having taken her own life. I think it misses the point of all that. As of now, Matthew faces a minimum of life in prison if convicted on this murder charge, but it's potential that he could be given the death sentence.
This is crazy, man. And I just wonder, I mean, obviously this is something that's still in the works, right? So I think there's a lot of pieces of evidence that could be presented in court that we just don't have right now. So I'm interested to see DNA results. I'm interested to, you know, right now, all we have is circumstantial. He was there. We know that her life ended moments, if not, or, you know, at the time or right after the time that he left. So that's all circumstantial. Now, did she go and commit suicide after he gave her the news that they were breaking up, or was he involved in her death? And I think the evidence either way is going to be presented at trial. So I think this is one that we'll just have to keep following.
Yeah, I'm obviously an advocate of innocent until proven guilty. I will say that it doesn't look good based on what we know. And there certainly has been what I would call a wealth of evidence that there was definitely some wrongdoing and sexual abuse and rape being done within this Explorers program. So I think the evidence doesn't look good for the murder charge. I, like you said, I'm interested to see what else comes out about it. But if nothing else, it looks like there are definitely things that need to be pursued for what happened when Sandra and others were teenagers, preteens even. She was 12 when she signed up in this Explorers program, and all the awful things that happened to children under the care of the very people who take an oath to serve and protect.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that all of this comes to light and is, you know, just all this evil is rooted out. So I hate that it's taken her death, but man, I just hope that at the end of this, there's justice, and it's swift, and it's to the fullest extent of the law.
If they do show that Matthew and even others were involved, I agree with Barbara, the only thing resembling justice will be spending the rest of his life behind bars. So if that is the case, we will, of course, keep everybody updated. We put a lot of our live updates over on TikTok and Instagram. So if you aren't following us there at True Crime Cast, go check it out. As case updates and trial updates become available, we post them out there in short form as their brief moments of sharing news, but we will of course have follow-up episodes as well as that comes out.
Yep, and we will always post those updates over on Patreon as well. So don't forget, as little as $3 a month, you get access to all of our bonus material that's only available to our Patreon members.
We really appreciate you guys. This is an interesting and heartbreaking topic to cover, so thanks for joining us in this conversation. We'd love to know what you have to say about it. So feel free to share in a review and comments or over on social media. But we appreciate you guys coming along with us for this ride.
And until next crime, this has been True Crimecast.
You've listened to True Crimecast, distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.